Dear Jennifer, dear Kurt, there's so much I want to say to you. It's been 2 weeks since Elia's death, and still I stumble around distracted, unable to put sentences together, not trusting my voice. So I turn to paper. It forces a discipline of word choice, and it is the words that carry such power, the saying of words so difficult. Words from the mouth of my son Jason on a beautiful summer morning, as I reach for the thermos of coffee and wonder why he's here so early. Elia died. Elia died. And instantly, the world changes forever. I can tell you that I dreaded coming to your house. Driving down Hazel Valley Road, I felt pure dread. First to walk into the presence of such grief and loss and sorrow as I knew awaited me, and to enter that room where you sat in shock on the couch, and looking into your eyes would at once and finally eliminate any hope I had that this was some horrible joke, some amazing example of mistaken identity, that you would meet me in the driveway laughing and blushing with the silliness of the false alarm. Such a thought was still possible on the morning of July 14th on a rural two-lane road in southern Washington County. Death has entered my life more than once, and the loss of my own daughter, Julianne, so many years ago should give me wisdom and perspective to help ease your sorrow. But it will become apparent with my first words that I have nothing to offer but uncompromising and complete honesty. So when you looked into my eyes and said, "Papu, how do you ever get over this?" I answered, "I have never gotten over it. I simply endure it." "How do you endure it?" you asked. And I answered, "You are distracted by day-to-day life, and in your quiet moments it comes back." What I didn't say, you will not want to ever get over it. This is what I know. You are not getting out of this death without feelings of horrible guilt. No parent who loses a child ever does. There was nothing you could have done to prevent Elia's death. I know this. The physicians and nurses at the hospital know this. The coroner knows this. But you will never believe it. Never. You will burst into tears at the oddest moments, shopping for groceries, working in the garden, sitting in the laundromat, driving down the highway, having dinner with friends. Don't fight those tears. Each time it will feel like a conversation with Elia. Your relationship with each other will be tested. Expect it. You may feel great love and strength surge between you as you face a common enemy. And you may resent your partner's presence as a distraction from your own grieving. There may be details of the horror of Elia's death and the days and weeks leading up to it that only you can know, things for which you may hold each other responsible. Forgive everything. You may feel guilty when you laugh, when you have a moment of happiness, because it will feel like a betrayal of Elia. You may want to have sex because it demonstrates and strengthens your love and commitment, and you may not want to have sex because it will feel stupid and inappropriate and your joy a betrayal. You may want Huxley and Greenlee to be quiet and go away and leave you alone so you can think and grieve, and you may not want them out of your sight for an instant. You may resent their ability to have fun and laugh as if nothing has happened, and you may find great solace in it. You may be desperately concerned for their safety, and any lingering mysteries as to the cause of Elia's death will fuel those fears. Be angry. Anger helps. Be furious with the insensitive police officers and nurses and physicians and caseworkers you encountered, and don't let them forget what they did to you. You will have nights of no sleep, of constant fear and panic and sorrow, and you will have nights of profoundly deep sleep, that you will want to continue for eternity. People will constantly be asking you how you're doing, as if there were any answer other than totally and completely devastated. And you will wish that there was some scale that you could just say, "Oh, I'm at level 3 today, thank you," and they could go away and leave you alone. Sometime, somewhere, someone will say to you that you should be happy that Elia died because God needed another little angel in heaven. I hope you have the courage to answer them the way that I wanted to but didn't. That's an interesting hypothesis. I suppose that means that if you die, it's because God needed another inconsiderate jerk in heaven. Someone will say to you that you're lucky, that you're young and can have more children, as if Elia could simply be replaced. Do what you want to this person. You will not be convicted by a jury of your peers. Working helps. It helps a lot. Routine helps. Physical labor helps. Being needed by others helps. Having to take care of your other children, Huxley and Greenlee, and each other, and friends and clients will all help. Everything may feel stupid and trivial. You will not care that the city council has agreed on a new route for Gregg Street. You will not care that it's owner appreciation day at the food co-op. You will not care how you look, what you're wearing, what you're eating. The sentiment, if not the lyrics of an old song, will often run through your head. Why does my heart go on beating? Why do these eyes of mine cry? Don't they know it's the end of the world? It ended when you said goodbye. Huxley and Greenlee may have fears and guilt that they can't express. They may have, in anger, wished Elliot dead more than once. They will need to be assured and reassured that they were not responsible for her death and that they are not going to die, that whatever killed Elliot will not kill them, and they must believe that you will always be there for them. Support groups are useful, and it's not just the knowledge that others are facing similar grief, but you will be called upon to help others, to talk about what happened, and that can be good for you. People may avoid saying Elia's name for fear of hurting you, so you must be assertive in your insistence on her inclusion. Say her name, laugh and cry. Each time you say her name or tell a story about her, even if it's the story of her death, it will feel as if an infinitesimally small piece of sorrow has dropped away. You will hear Elia's voice. It will be real and unmistakable, and you will jump up and run into the room, and you will not question for a moment the fact of your having heard her. You will only wonder why she's not standing there. Smell will be an intense and immediate highway to Elia. You will smell everything looking for her. Toys, books, dirty clothes, furniture, each other. And you may feel panic if you sense her smell dissipating. If something is cleaned or misplaced, you may feel as if a direct line of communication has been lost. Whoever said that time heals all wounds was an idiot. But sometimes it allows scar tissue to form, allows a return to some functionality. And in the case of losing a child, that is no small accomplishment. As I write these words to you, I am looking at a photograph. It is not of Elia, but by Elia. Jason, Greenlee, and my granddaughter Harmony sitting on the canvas in my studio. 30 minutes earlier, I had seen them walking up the driveway from the creek, three beautiful young women in bathing suits, laughing, telling stories. I begged them to come in for a quick photograph. So they stood and sat and danced and acted silly and serious. And all the time, Elia was watching me, the movements I made, the buttons I pushed. A hungry intelligence in those eyes. She came over and demanded to take a photo. I'm used to that. But she didn't want to just click the shutter like most children. She wanted to compose. Which button focuses, she asked. What do I turn after I take the picture? She had seen everything. I stepped back and gave her full control. What I regret most now is that I didn't step onto the canvas, that I can't see now what I looked like through Elia's eyes. You may find yourself grasping at religious and scientific concepts, bits and pieces of anything you've ever come across. On Monday, you may picture Elia with wings floating over golden cobblestones. On Tuesday, you may find yourself having an animated conversation with a spider or a snake or a dog or a teddy bear, convinced that Elia has been reincarnated or transferred. On Wednesday, you may be thinking in terms of molecules rearranging themselves in the closed system of Earth's biosphere. On Thursday, Elia may be alive and well and happy, but simply in another parallel dimension. Your friends with children may experience a form of survivor guilt. They will feel gratitude that what happened to you has not happened to them, and they will be ashamed for having the thought. You may feel as if some evil entity is hovering nearby, waiting to strike again, and you may find yourself negotiating with it, making deals, offering yourself. You may feel as if you are receiving messages from Elia, and you will be desperate to understand them. They may come in the form of dreams, or it may be a light bulb that's acting strangely, or a radio that comes on unexpectedly. Or you may be shopping at the co-op, and a little girl you've never seen before may walk up to you and say hello, then smile in a funny way and walk off. And you may yell Elia's name and run after her, and if not, wish later that you had. I am thinking of Sweden Creek Falls and a cold December morning last year, of meeting Kurt and the children at Jason's cabin, of riding in the back of Kurt's pickup, of hiking over steep and ice-covered trails, three men doing a little dance of protection, trying to be in the right position to catch a falling child, or at least to break the fall of those fearless, boulder-hopping young people. Fearless, self-confident, intelligent, curious, comfortable. Of sitting at the end of the Box Canyon under the frozen waterfall sharing food, apples, bread, cheese, and homemade venison jerky. All the time I kept watching the interaction of child and father and thinking, so this is what it's supposed to be like. This is how fathers are supposed to act. This is how children are supposed to be. This is how families are supposed to work. It was a few days before Christmas, and I left later that afternoon feeling as if you had given me such a gift for allowing me to be there. For the rest of your life, when someone asks you how many children you have, if you say two, you will feel you have betrayed Elia. And if you say three, you will forever be making explanations to strangers. Don't let anyone tell you what normal is. Don't let anyone tell you how long you are supposed to openly grieve. I don't know exactly when it happens. It may take years, or it may already be in place. But you will make a deal with Elia's memory, her spirit. You will envision her somewhere happy and healthy. Perhaps Beach Creek, perhaps in your front room, perhaps in a setting from your past. All will be forgiven. You will think of her there often, and she will glance at you and wave, and smile. It will give you great comfort. Elia enriched my life. I will think of her and cry and smile and laugh out loud until the day I die. And when I picture her, I see her splashing in the creek by the lower pasture, hunting crayfish, collecting rocks. My daughter Julie is her best friend, and my mother, Anna Jean, is watching them both and laughing out loud. They turn and wave.